Church of the Brethren webcast series. I am Anton Eller, executive producer of these webcasts, and your host for this program. Welcome, everyone, to the seventh of our series of podcasts about the Chronicler. With me today is Frank Ramirez. Frank is a pastor in the Church of the Brethren and is currently at the Everett, Pennsylvania Church of the Brethren congregation. Frank is also the president of the Brethren Journal Association, which publishes Brethren Life and Thought. Frank received his Master of Divinity degree from Bethany Theological Seminary. Welcome, Frank.
Thank you very much, Enton, and good to be here, and good to be thinking about all those folks who may be getting a lot of good out of the book, The Chronicler, and getting to know a portion of the Bible that we sometimes take for granted. I think the question I get most often about Chronicles is, why do we have to read this? We just read this stuff in 1 and 2 Kings. But as we're discovering, there's a lot more to it than we think. In the writing of this chapter, I bring up the topic of succession, which is extremely important. We sometimes take how easy succession is in our country for granted. I remember two major traumas during the course of both my childhood and adulthood. As a child, President Kennedy was assassinated, a time of great fear, but there was no fear about the succession. We knew that Lyndon Baines Johnson would become president. As an adult, there was the trauma of the drama around Richard Nixon, who became the first president to resign from office. But there was no question about the succession, even though his vice president, Gerald Ford, had not been elected to that office but appointed. Everyone knew that he was the legal president. However, the first time that a president died in office, when William Henry Harrison died in 1841, no one was quite sure how it would work. Many people assumed that the cabinet would actually be the ones who would run the country, or that John Tyler would be acting president, not actually the president of the United States. Tyler took charge, however, made it clear that he was the president, and established a precedent. We're fortunate in that regard. In some countries, the monarchy is clearly defined, and the succession is clearly defined, but in many cases it is not. As we watch the drama in North Korea, we know that questions of succession can be very problematic. In this particular story from the Bible, we see two different ways of looking at the problem and the question of succession. In Samuel and Kings, there's a real question as to who will succeed. David has had struggle with his sons, there have been wars, people have been killed, and it's not clear that Solomon will be the son who succeeds him, even though Bathsheba really lobbies on his behalf. Bathsheba is not an issue in Chronicles, and it's very clear from the start that Solomon will succeed Davis. It will come about in a very stately fashion. We have none of this nonsense about David being an old and feeble king who requires a human bed warmer to keep his circulation going at night. He is hale and hearty, and he makes plans to pass things along. And in chapters 28 and 29 of 1 Chronicles, we see the careful planning that David has done. He does the purchasing. He takes care to hire the workers. Everything falls into place. And he allows himself time for a great offering and for a prayer. This reflects a great deal of maturity on David's part, because we are all going to die. All of us must make some sort of concession to what we will not accomplish during this life. We need to celebrate what we did do, and we need to prepare to pass things along to the next generation. I've just finished a very interesting book called Collapse: How Societies Choose to Succeed or Fail, by Jared Diamond. He said one of the motivations for writing this book, which examines civilizations that in the past succeeded or failed, as well as looking at our present world situation, was because he did the math and realized that many of the projections about resources running out would not affect him, but would definitely affect his children and his grandchildren. He wanted to make sure that they had a better world and wanted all of us to share that exact same concern. But many of us are in a state of denial. There was a wonderful woman who has since gone on to her reward at my last church in Indiana. Her name was Irma Miller, and she had a wonderful program. She just wanted people to sit down and think about their funeral service and to write out what hymns they would like played, a few things they would like their pastor to know in the event that a new pastor had come in and had never really gotten to know her yet, and what they would like people to remember about them. One church she was at really took to the program, but at my church when she came, people were alarmed. Some said, well, I don't want people to get my money. As it turns out, of course, people will get their money, but no money was involved. That wasn't the point. They simply didn't want to talk about what might happen to them, especially the fact that there's death. Huey Long, the dictator of Louisiana, always used to joke about the deduct box. The deduct box was where they stuffed all the money that they would glom from this place or that place. And whenever they needed cash, he'd pull it out. Well, when Huey Long was assassinated and was lying, dying on his bed, all of his associates in crime, other government officials, kept saying, Huey, where's the deduct box? Huey, where's the deduct box? And he refused to tell them, because right up to the end, he was in denial about the fact that he was dying. Most of us, it may not be that dramatic, but I see many cases as a pastor where families refuse to go through their belongings and clean their houses. They say, I'll let my kids go through this mess. And they do. Others say, I'm too cussed to die. And still others say things like, whatever happens, don't put me in a nursing home. Make that promise. And they make people make promises that they cannot possibly keep because we don't know what's going to happen. We need to look at some of these questions a little earlier than we think. Both my wife and I have a parent who is suffering from a different form of dementia. And in one case, the parent had made arrangements, and indeed everything was in ship shape and in good order so that others could be able to handle his affairs. Another person had already decided that this was never going to happen and they weren't going to die. But it can be very difficult then. We may not want to face the fact that we won't be in a position to make these kind of decisions. Enton here and I were discussing that just a little bit, and I'd like to invite him to come in on this discussion a little bit.
Well, my father passed away from Alzheimer's, and it's raised the question for me how to make preparations for what comes next or for the next generation. The chances of me also having Alzheimer's are higher than others for that reason, because it's in the family. And so what preparations do I need to make? How do I prepare for a time when I may still be here but may not be able to function well?
Yeah, and Enton, I don't know what you think, but sometimes there's testing that can be done to show if we have that particular gene in our background. And the dementia that my father's undergoing is not so genetic as it is diabetes related, which of course I am prey to as well. So I've thought a lot about it. But what is your feeling about testing ahead of time?
Well, I would rather know so I can prepare. But also in churches that I've been with, there are some people that would rather not know and refuse to take the test.
And I understand that. But it, you know, I hope people realize that regardless of what we do, whether there's heart disease in our families, pleurisy or asthma or whatever it might be, that we need to think ahead a little bit and make good planning, as David is shown doing in this particular chapter. As it turns out, when David concludes his life, you know, you sometimes hear people say, you know, I'll do this if it's the last thing I ever do. Well, the last thing David ever does is make his peace with his past. He, as he gives a great offering to fund, and this is out of his personal funds, to fund the building of the temple, he begins to pray, and he asks the question, who am I that God should look with such kindness on me? And gives God the credit as the source of what he is giving, recognizing that our offerings are returning to God what is already God's in the first place. And he also reminds the people that we were aliens and transients before we came into our own, and that we must never forget the fact that we owe a lot to others and we owe a lot to God. Personally, I find that to be an important issue in our own nation's history from the beginning, and especially now with controversies about immigration and what I find the ironic desire on every generation to demonize the next set of immigrants. And the irony, of course, comes from the fact that we are all descended from immigrants. even Native Americans, and being Hispanic means I'm about half Native American, we still crossed that land bridge a long time ago. We came from somewhere else, and David wants the people to remember that. The utopian nature of Chronicles helps us to look at things as they ought to be. And I know that sometimes we look back at our lives and realize what it ought to be, and sometimes people with heartfelt sincerity have rewritten their past so that it's better than it ought to be. And that, in some ways, that's okay. I think it's okay for us to see David as he ought to have been. I can live with the David who's flawed as well, because I see myself very clearly there. But I also want to see God's anointed as living up to God's best expectations. One of my favorite stories is one called The Kilimanjaro Device by Ray Bradbury. And it's about a man who invents a time machine for one specific purpose. He just wants to go back and change the ending of Ernest Hemingway's life. Ernest Hemingway, as some of you may know, upon discovering that he had an incurable disease, ended his own life, which is a difficult choice. I, like many of you, have had close friends who have ended their lives, and I have come to understand that it's not possible to judge these things, and that I believe that nobody's beyond God's forgiving love, because people are struggling and dealing with difficult issues and leaving all of us with lots of questions. And in this story, the main character instead wanted Ernest Hemingway to take his life by trying to climb Mount Kilimanjaro and dying among the snows. I would like to be able to rewrite all the lives that have ended in an unsatisfactory way. I would like to know that my life is going to end in a satisfactory way. But what I enjoy thinking about is that in God's eyes, we are seen as the best we can possibly be. And King David giving that offering and praying and reminding us who we are and where we came from reminds me that we ourselves are seen in the best possible light by God, and I hope by the people of God. We cannot control the situation we find ourselves, and we do have to make the best of what happens. David, as a man of war, cannot be the person who builds the temple, according to the chronicler. He has to accept that that was the situation that was given to him. In the novel, The Lord of the Rings, Frodo Baggins bewails the fact that he was born into a generation to which great choices were given, and he wishes that none of this had come to be. And Gandalf the Wizard simply tells him, well, we don't control the time into which we're born, but we have to do the best with what we have in the time that is given to us. And that reminded me a little bit, once again, of Abraham Lincoln. In one of his first public speeches, he said that all the great decisions were made by the founding fathers. They were the ones who had established the means of government, and that the task of the current generation was simply to be caretakers, to take good care of what they inherited. However, as he discovered later in life, it wasn't the case at all. His generation were not just caretakers. They faced the biggest crisis the country would ever face, that of the Civil War. And they rose to that occasion, especially so did he. The work wasn't done, and you know, the work isn't done for us either. There are tasks that we are not going to get done, and there are tasks that we can accomplish for the benefit of other people, which we ourselves will not feel the benefit of. We are not just caretakers. We are stewards to whom the task has come. I don't know how fair it is to call David a man of war or peace. You might discuss that. You might discuss interpreting the lives of your family. What was your family life like as it was given to you to be understood, and what did you discover later in life about your family? And what are your plans for the future? How are you going to be cared for medically, emotionally? And one way to maybe end this session is simply to sing the hymns that you would like to have sung at your funeral. Maybe do a little planning so that others won't have to guess. And while you're at it, prepare for the possibility that you may not be able to make the decisions you need to do for your own care. Do a little advance planning. And whatever else, enjoy the chapter and enjoy the scripture.
So, Frank, this passage of the Chronicler points us through the story of David to how we might start thinking about what comes after us.
I think it gives us a real template for making the best of what's given to us, and for celebrating the limitations we were given, as well as the opportunities that God allows us to take.
Thank you so much for sharing with us today, Frank.
You're welcome.
Church of the Brethren webcasts are made possible through the collaborative efforts of all of the Church of the Brethren agencies and are produced by Bethany Theological Seminary. For more information about these webcasts, please visit us on the web at www.cobwebcast.bethanyseminary.edu. Thank you for joining us for the Church of the Brethren webcast series.